Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
Happy Wednesday.
You know what? I was going to argue it, but Dan's playing some ska music right now.
It's going well.
So there's never a bad time.
We're halfway through the week. The snow turned into rain. We're good. We're fine.
The snow turned into rain, so I guess that is part of good because of the fact that, like, it's not snow, but...
Exactly. It's exactly right.
But nobody likes this, and it gives fall critics their ammunition.
Yeah, they do.
If it's going to be that, either make it go away or actually snow.
Fair point. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on a Wednesday. Bills back to practice today. We'll get our first injury reports. We'll see what is up with the likes of Josh Palmer and others. Dalton Kincaid week to week. We kind of know he's probably not playing this week. Landon Jackson goes to IR. Did make some moves on the practice squad. We saw that yesterday. Mecole Hardman officially signed to the practice squad. So, get it going. It's good. For an NFC game, it is somewhat a must-win for the Bills.
It is a little bit of a must-win for the Bills this week. And the reason for that is circumstance. Common opponents. If the Bills are going to find their way fighting to get back into the division race here, you need this game. Because it is a common opponent.
We'll see. Tampa also wounded to hell. I think everyone kind of knows that, but just some of the players they have on IR, Chris Godwin, Bucky Irving, Hassan Reddick, Mike Evans, Jalen McMillan. It's a lot of guys for them. The Bills also, of course, are injured. This has been a pretty big discussion throughout the league of a lot of teams just kind of limping through the season, just trying to get through game to game. San Francisco has been one of those teams as well. But this is probably going to be, and we took calls yesterday, Derek, about this, of this is probably going to be two pissed off teams trying to right the ship, and we'll see which one gets the goods from this. It is in Buffalo. That is a huge bonus here. Josh Allen versus Baker Mayfield, but both quarterbacks are going to have a limited offense, potentially. Again, we'll see about Josh Palmer, but Dalton Kincaid likely out. We'll see if the Bills get back Gabe Davis.
Yeah,
he's been on the practice squad. He's been recovering from his injury. There's kind of been always that rumbling of like, all right, he's going to play some games for the Bills. That's going to happen. We'll see if it does this week. We'll talk to Sal Capaccio probably in the next 10 minutes or so. We'll get him in early as the Bills get back to practice today. We've also got a Sabres game tonight, Sabres after dark. They're playing Utah.
Oh, boy, are they banged up in a way that is unconventional. But... yeah, Utah tonight with a depleted roster. Since they became Utah, by the way, you haven't beat them yet. So,
right,
go get that done.
That'd be nice. Go get that done.
Go get that done.
We'll talk to the Sabres a little bit later on today. Of course, they're out west, so it's going to be a little bit later tonight. 8 p.m. pregame, 9 p.m. puck drop. They'll play Utah tonight, Colorado tomorrow, and then I believe Detroit on Saturday. So it's a pretty quick run here for the Sabres, who are just wounded in ways that are nearly unimaginable. But for the Bills with Tampa Bay, they're both 6-3. They're both somewhat reeling. Many facts due to injuries, but also, I mean, for the Bills, we've talked about kind of to death, just the laying of an egg against the Dolphins, where Tampa, you gave New England one of their best wins. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. New England now, I mean, it's a weak schedule, sure, but they got a win at Buffalo, and they got a win at Tampa. Those are good wins, and with where the Bucs were not that long ago, Baker Mayfield was playing at such a high level. I mean, my favorite game I've watched this year was a few weeks ago. It was Tampa at Seattle. Just an offensive explosion. They have Emeka Ibuka.
Yes, you were yelling at the television, actually.
Because why would you go away from that?
When Red Zone would change it.
Yeah, don't go away from it.
You know what's kind of funny, though?
It was such a good game.
New England, oddly enough, they are a division leader, and they are now on the inside track as one of the three teams that could get the one seed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet they would scream the perfect wild card threat. 3-2 at home, 5-0 on the road, including wins at Buffalo and Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Could they accidentally sabotage themselves by being a home team in the playoffs?
Yeah, we're in reality, we play better on the road. It's funny, Tampa, so they're 6-3. They've had highlight kind of moments. They've also, this was earlier in the year more for them, but they would kind of scrape by and get wins. You know, Atlanta in week one, 23-20 win. Week two, at Houston, 20-19 win. New York Jets, 29-27 win.
Which included
win.
A blocked field goal and Aaron Glenn having a hell of a celebration. Yeah.
They have been scraping by. And it kind of points to the stats as well for them. Points
even
for,
their losses
oh, yeah,
were in one-score games. The Lions game is the one that is the anomaly, 24-9. And the Saints is the other end of the anomaly. They win by 20 against New Orleans.
Right. Both of those are kind of more like, all right, look who you played. But so to that point, though, it kind of points to what their stats are. Points for, they're 11th in the league at 24.4. Points against, they're 14th in the league, 22.9. They're seemingly a pretty solid team that has been really ravaged by injuries.
They've shown, though, that they can also win in a lot of scenarios here.
Mm-hmm.
Offensive shootout, like Seattle, absolutely. Let's get after it. Defensive conundrum, week two against the Texans. They can win in various ways. Special teams gaff, you got to get back down the field and win the game. Jets. They've won in different ways this year to a point where it is Bills better be on their A game because Tampa finds ways to close games typically. Even the New England game, like they lose by 5, but New England had a 2-score lead late in that contest. So New England had more control of that game than the scoreboard would lead you to believe.
Yeah, Tampa was chasing.
Tampa was chasing. They were trying to fight their way back the entire time. Not the entire time, actually. Tampa had a first drive touchdown and had control early on, but then New England takes control of that game. They're chasing the rest of it. They do eventually lose by that one possession. But for me, I do think it is Tampa, if there's an opportunity to close a game, they have shown that they can close a game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Todd Bowles, Baker Mayfield, veteran presence there. They're one of the more well-run organizations in the sport, especially in the NFC South, which kind of seems to be poorly run, except for Tampa. I will tell you, the one big stat I'm looking at for this week, and it's because we've talked about it with the Bills and their offense and knowing the likelihood that Kincaid is out, and we'll see if Josh Palmer is coming back. And as we've talked about with the offense, it goes this year as James Cook goes. Derek, they've only given up over 100 yards rushing 3 times this year.
Oh, so we're in for one of these games.
Seattle, they gave up 121. Detroit, they gave up 164. And last week, they gave up 166. But against Bijan Robinson, 69. They gave up 99 against the Jets, 88 against Philadelphia, 67 against San Francisco, 48 against the Saints. It could be one of those games where they're talented enough, and game script will tell you, you should key in on James Cook, you should stop him and worry about everything else afterwards, that they have the potential to do that. This is going to be two teams that are mad and trying to right the ship, get it going again. And I'm not saying it's pointing to Tampa is going to have a good shot at this or that I'm favoring them. I'm not saying that. But they may have the ability to do it. Because the Bills have become, in many aspects, so one-dimensional at times, they cannot really play from behind. They're not really built for that.
Right.
And the injuries make that even more so. And Tampa, with Emeka Ebuka can strike fast. They don't have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Kind of seems to not matter. They have Tez Johnson scoring two touchdowns against New England. Emeka Ebuka continues to be one of the best rookie receivers we've seen in the last few years, and that's still even with the likes of Malik Nabers and stuff like that over the last few years. They are a very good team, and the Bills, weirdly, are in a bad spot with where they're at. It's not just the loss to Miami. It is much more looking at this whole thing, kind of ignore, you know, the bye week just being the bye week. If they lose to Tampa, they've lost four of their last six. That's where we're sitting at now with this Bills team. If you take out the bye week and you just put it all together, if they lose, it's four of their last six. And they are not on a good run at all.
That's the disturbing trend, and we were talking about this on my drive-in. Yeah, it turns into all of a sudden you are losing four of your last six. It is – you are kind of trending toward a downward spiral overall, and it doesn't look pretty anymore. How they came out of the bye week was good. Put a beat down on Carolina. They win against Kansas City in a game that, while back and forth the entire time, the Bills did have control of that game. It was theirs unless they dictated it would not be. And then Miami happens. And all of a sudden, it can flip once again if you lose this game. Because you are losers of four of your last six games. And you had the bye week already. So we might be in for a season where this spiral could continue in that sort of way. It can turn very quickly on you all of a sudden. And typically, games against NFC opponents, when you're sitting at 6-3, aren't what I'd call must win. This one is. Because of several factors. One, you don't want to be the team that's lost four of your last six. Two, it's a common opponent if you want to fight your way back into any conversations about having the division. Three, I don't want to be staring at 6-5, or 6-4, excuse me, with the chance to keep falling further than that. You've got to get this under control because there's a lot to it in how you are perceived at that point. By the way, Houston's up next. Another team that limits run games.
Yeah, you go on a road trip here at Houston, at Pittsburgh.
But by the way, Houston is also a short week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Thursday Night Football.
That's Thursday Night Football. And nobody has a tendency to play well on Thursday Night Football.
No, those have really become a game of just win it. Just get out of there healthy and win. No,
I don't
take too many, you know, grandiose things from it. Just get a win on Thursday night and move on.
Yeah, everyone seems to play gross on Thursday night is typically how it looks. We get every now and then the fun, entertaining game, but typically it looks like a Thursday night game.
Mm-hmm. We'll get more on the Bills as we go now to our West Her Hotline. Bills back to practice today. Sal Capaccio joins the show here. Sal, good morning. How are we doing, man?
Good, guys. Good morning to you as well.
Hey,
good
Sal.
Morning. Good morning. So we maybe have one of the few really crucial out-of-conference games here with Tampa Bay coming up now. They just lost to New England. Now it's a common opponent. And what me and Derek were just talking here to kind of bring in the show is if you take out the bye week, if the Bills were to fall to Tampa this Sunday, they've now all of a sudden lost four of their last six. It's the sky is not falling for this Bills team, Sal. They are riddled with injuries. But, man, when you look at it, you know, kind of from the outside looking in, it's not the prettiest situation right now.
No, for sure. I mean, like, they've been down this road before in years past, but it just feels like, you know, there's a more sense of urgency to get things fixed this time around. Because I think in years past, you'd be like, okay, well, things aren't going well, but you still have Josh Allen and – you know, you can, you know, score points and get your way out of it. And I think that's what people are questioning right now, right? Because the offense, the passing offense specifically, just have not looked like it should look. And I think that's where there's more of a concern. But overall, I mean, I was just reading an article. It's so funny about this because the Bills are playing the Bucks this week, right? And the Bucks, I agree with you. Like, this is an NFC game, and what Derek just said is right. Normally, NFC game, you know, you're taking mid-November, you're like, okay, well, if you drop that one, it's not, you know, the end of the world, but you feel like you have to keep pace here with the Patriots. The Patriots just beat this team last week. You feel like you do. You know, the same thing is true the other way, and I would have felt better, obviously, if the Patriots had lost for right. Obvious reasons, but if the Bucs had won that game and then they come to Buffalo, like, you know, coming off a big win, they probably are a little bit maybe letting their guard down, so to speak, right? But they need this win. Mm-hmm. Like, the Bucs need this win. And that's also something that raises your antenna. So I'm reading an article yesterday from one of the Buccaneers reporters and writers, and they're basically talking about how, hey, even if the if you go back when the Bucs won the Super Bowl with Tom Brady in 2020, they were 6-3 after 9 games. Same record they have now. They were actually like 6-5, I believe, after 11 games, I want to look back at. So it's just on your perspective. That doesn't mean that it's got to hold true the same way with the Bills. When I go back to what I just said, the Bills have been down this road before. If you go back to 2022 or 2023, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 2023, the Bills finished 11-6 overall.
Yeah, but they were 6-6,
after
six, right?
Week
yeah.
10, they were 5-5 and in 10th place in the conference. This is 2 years ago.
Yeah. So it is almost one of those things, Guy. I've heard people bring up, too, that this is maybe like a new spot for McDermott. It maybe isn't. I think they've been down these roads before and maybe in worse situations. Where the frustration or maybe the concern does come from, and Sal, you brought it up there, is can the offense score its way out of it? Can Allen just start ripping the ball and just put the team on his shoulders and go? I think that's where the fear is in reality, it maybe is actually James Cook that has to sort of get them out of this, with Josh Allen, of course, also playing into that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Bills have a philosophy here, how they want to play. They want to play, and how they want to play is to have a dominant, you know, up front offensive line and run the ball and control the game and win like that. And we all say, well, wait a minute, that's kind of insane because you have Josh Allen. And I don't disagree with that, but they're also very good at the way that they want to play, and it's proved to be very fruitful for them. But what's happening is they've given themselves less margin for error when things start to go the other way, like it did in Miami last week. They don't have that ability right now and haven't shown that ability. I guess they did against Baltimore in that one game, but they haven't really shown that ability. Atlanta's the same thing. To really climb their way out of it and chase the game. Sean McDermott said that after the game, chasing the game. And I agree with that. The Bills, once they're starting to chase the game, that's when you feel like, you know, and it's come to fruition, they haven't been able to do that. But you have Josh Allen. You should be able to chase a game once in a while to be able to come back. And yes, they did it week one. Maybe, you know, you look back at week one, guys, maybe that was I'm not saying it was a bad thing. It's a good thing they came back, but maybe it gave them a false sense of how they can play in those situations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And think that, well, it's okay if that happens. We're okay. We have Josh Allen. We have this passing game, but that hasn't happened since. And the games that they've lost since then and the games that they've, you know, been behind, you specifically think about New England. You specifically think about Atlanta and Miami, especially, I think they just haven't been able to recover when they haven't controlled the game. The two dichotomies between the Kansas City game and the Miami game are exact examples of this. Against Kansas City, did any of us think that they didn't control the game? Of course they did, the whole way. They controlled the game. Now, it was 7-7 at one point, but okay. And Bills are actually down 10-7. But even when they were down 10-7, they have the ball. I never felt the Bills were not in control. You know what I mean? In this game against Miami, it felt like things just started to snowball. As soon as they got up, as soon as they were down 13-0 after the mixed extra point, I think that's when you start to go, okay, I don't know what they can do here.
Yeah, it was 13-0 before you could blink. I mean, the Dolphins were on the Bills fast, it felt like.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's both sides, which is the Bills, they don't go for it on 4th-and-1. And I know people, oh my God, I can't believe he didn't go for it. It is the 34-yard line, right? I mean, the 34-yard line is literally closer than if you take a touchback in your own zone.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. And I would have liked to see him go for it because of what people say, which is true. To me, you're playing the Miami Dolphins. If you turn the ball over there and they score, so what? I'll come back. I have Josh Allen. But again, I'll go back to how do the Bills want to play? You know what? We'll punt it away. We'll be fine here. We'll stop them. You know, we're going to control this game. But the Dolphins went down the field and they scored. And that was the start of everything that happened.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, as the Bills get back to practice today, the injuries, obviously, Christian Benford, Taron Johnson, Josh Palmer, Shaq Thompson, Landon Jackson obviously was hurt in that game and goes on IR. They bring in Mecole Hardman, but I am starting to wonder, is it getting to time where we are going to start questioning if Gabe Davis is going to start generating a little bit more of a presence as well?
Well, I don't think that the question is going to happen at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sean McDermott's kind of alluded to that. Like, he's never discounted that Gabe will be on the roster. It's kind of been more of a when, not if.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to happen. And I wouldn't be I would not be surprised if it's this week, guys. You know, especially everything that's going on with revolving around Keon Coleman and the questions about, you know, effort and Sean McDermott kind of not squashing that question per se, right? Keon's on the field a lot. He's been on the field more than 70% of the snaps.
Yeah.
Next closest receiver is Khalil Shakir at 60%. You know, if you think about Gabe Davis and his role, it would be that skill set. That's kind of what you're looking at. And maybe there's a switch there coming. So, yeah, I think Gabe Davis is definitely an option. Then you get to Mecole Hardman. You know, I tweeted out yesterday when they signed him to the practice squad. It's not just the field stretching ability. He has that. And you want that in your offense. They need that in their offense. The other thing he does is he returns punts. You guys know I'm a big Brandon Codrington fan for his skill set. But he has been pretty ineffective this year when he's been on the field. And if you're going to be not super effective and not contribute on defense or another position, it's tough to justify activating. So that's why he's been inactive, I think. I think he's been inactive because if he's not going to be helping on offense or defense, he better be really, really great at what he does in the return game. And it just hasn't happened this year. So now you put Khalil Shakir back there and, you know, you want to make sure Khalil stays healthy and all that. He's very good decision making and all that. He can return punts. There's no doubt he can break one once in a while, but that's not ideal. So maybe Mecole Hardman represents somebody that can help out in that. And guys, the Bills have the second worst starting average field position in the NFL this year. Mm-hmm. Second worst. You know who's worse? You know who has the worst starting field position? Want to guess?
Now I feel like it's going to be a good team, but I want to say like New Orleans.
No, you're right. Your first inclination. It's the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. They're
the
such
Philadelphia
a weird
Eagles
team.
And the Buffalo Bills have 1-2 Eagles Bills, the worst average drive starts in the NFL this year.
The Philadelphia Eagles also hate fun,
I believe that. Sal, did you realize this? Because it was the first thing I realized when Monday Night Football wrapped up. We started the week with a 10-7 game. We ended the week with a 10-7 game.
I did not realize that. Yeah, horrific. I mean, man, I watched that Steelers team, and I'm like, oh, and you're talking about the Eagles-Packers. I'm sorry.
Yes,
yeah, that was the Monday night game. I'm thinking about the Sunday night game, but I'll go to that one in a second.
About Steelers,
but
too. Oh.
Yeah, Steelers. I'm watching that, and I'm like, I think about the Steelers. I think about the Browns. And I know that you could have challenges against those teams and their defenses. And, man, just if the Bills could just do a little bit more what they're supposed to do on offense, they'll be fine because those offenses just do not challenge you that much. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, Sal. I know we've all talked about it kind of to death over the last month or so.
That's like, the next couple games, as a matter of fact, after Tampa, is offenses that don't really challenge
you. They can't really challenge you. But, like, I look around the AFC, and this is why I have really not totally given up on the Bills season as still being a Super Bowl contender. Even with all the issues, is that I look around the AFC and I go, who's really good? Even Indy at 8-2, Daniel Jones, he went from the bell of the ball to he's turning into a pumpkin real fast over the last few weeks. Coincidentally, just as his team put all of their eggs in his basket and trade 2 first-round picks for a corner. Nice job on Daniel Jones for that one. But, you know, Kansas City, we'll see how they look against Denver this week. That's going to be a game I am glued to coming off their bye. It's, you know, even New England, they're 8-2 and Drake May looks great, but everyone's kind of acknowledging their schedule. They're beating up on a bad schedule, albeit with wins on the road at Tampa and at Buffalo. It's just, it is still something to keep an eye on that the AFC is kind of allowing a lot of maybe middling teams to hang around here. Pittsburgh, of course, being one of them as well.
Yeah, that's right. You know, but hey, nothing wrong with the Patriots can only play who's on their schedule. We say that about the Bills sometimes.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, good for them. They've taken care of business. The Patriots have, you know, rolled off how many straight wins? 7 straight wins, right? They did lose to the Steelers and they did lose to the Raiders. They if they don't bring their A game, they can lose. And we've seen that. They get the Jets tomorrow night, and the Jets have, like, you guys are going to suit up for wide receiver soon, man, for the Jets. I mean, right? Like, what are you supposed to do there? They get the Bengals, who right now, and, you know, they can score points, but they just, I can see Drake May just carving them up in that game. They get the Giants, and then they have a, how about this? The Bills get them after a bye week. They get a whole 2 weeks to get ready for the Bills, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't see many losses left in their schedule, so they're going to have to drop one along the way, and you're going to have to beat them and pretty much stay perfect yourself for the Bills. So it's not looking like there's a really clear, easy path for the Bills. It's not at all. It's a very, very hard path to win their 6th straight division championship. But you got to keep playing the games, and you see what happens. And it all starts tomorrow night. You're right. And then, you know, the Bills get the Bucs this week. No Bucky Irving most likely this week again still. He's still out. It's been quite a while. No Chris Godwin. They've been playing without those guys for a while. Very good run defense for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Bills are going to be challenged in the run games. More focus on the pass game again this week, which is you got to get it going. You're facing a really, really good run defense in the Buccaneers this week. And unless you can unlock something against them that other teams haven't been able to do, you're going to have to throw the ball because they've been susceptible against the pass. And then Baker Mayfield has been playing at an MVP level at times this year, not as much lately. He's lost some linemen. He's lost some weapons. So those are things. And then just looking ahead, and I don't want to get too far ahead, but C.J. Stroud is still in concussion protocol for the Texans. There's thought that he might miss this week against the Titans. Mm-hmm. And then it's a quick turnaround against the Bills, so you just wonder right there if he's going to play. But, I mean, Davis Mills led 26-point comeback in the fourth quarter for them last week.
I mean, Davis Mills. I think it's the last Bills game I went to was Davis Mills was the starting quarterback for Houston when they came to Buffalo. I think it was a monsoon game. It was a very, very wet game. Sal, last thing here. I don't want to keep you too long, but real quick, the schedule for today with practice. And then I did want to get your thoughts before we kind of get way too past it. The Tom Pelissero report from this weekend about Jalen Waddle. And Quinnen Williams is also involved in that. But really the report, it seemed, was the Bills are the highest bidder for Waddle, first and a third. The problem, it seemed, was that the Bills were unwilling to move their first-round pick from 27 to 26. I just, for me at least, Sal, both, I don't love that report. There is no try. There is only do here, especially in professional sports. And then, two, I was a little surprised that, I mean, if that move is pulled off, I think that is the Bills quietly acknowledging we screwed this one up. Maybe we do need that guy that is going to demand a high volume of targets. Maybe, you know, outright saying a number one wide receiver.
Well, yeah, I mean, more information helps you dictate, you know, decisions. And obviously throughout the season here, information, injuries, things like that, get Brandon Bean back to a point where it felt like, according to the report, you know, he needed someone like that. And that's a big swing. That's a real big swing. You know, I've seen people question it and say, well, it's just PR spin. Okay, let me say, I do think it benefits the Bills for that to be out there to kind of show people, hey, we're trying. But I also think it's true that they did that. It's not like it's, you know, made up. I think the Bills took a swing, and I give Brandon Bean credit for that. But you have to wonder if it was the simple, hey, it's not 27, it's 26, and he said no, then sure. I mean, you could definitely make an argument that maybe he should have taken that swing. Maybe he should have done that. From his perspective, he's probably thinking, I can't be without a first and a third in the same year going into next year. Like, I need those guys. I have salary cap issues. I got to have young players early, you know, good early draft picks contribute right away. And I got to have an eye on that, you know, next year. I'm looking at Jalen Waddle's contract. It wouldn't be much to manage next year. So, you know, if that's a missed opportunity. I do wonder, though, guys, honestly, like, to focus on the other side and say, you know, Brandon Bean's over here maybe trying to do that. Do we know maybe did Chris – Brandon Bean seemed really upset that day. Like, he was very upset. Mm-hmm. And he said right out, if I was a betting man, I would have lost money. Thought we would have made a deal. That's an indication to me that he had something planned that he thought was done, or at least very close, and he was confident was going to get done. Did he have a deal with Chris Greer, and then Chris Greer got fired? And then the new GM comes in and goes, my first thing to do is not to trade Jalen Waddle to our arch rival, the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. Like, I am not – like, you could imagine any interim GM, Champ Kelly, coming in and going, dude, I'm not – my first active GM is not treating Jalen freaking Waddle to the Bills.
Right.
Right? Like, I'm not doing that. You could see something like that happen, right? I don't put it past it. That could have been what was happening in that play. Maybe even, can I go a step further? Maybe even the owner found out that Chris Greer was going to trade Jalen Waddle. And he said, no, you're not. And he fired him. I don't know. I'm just saying there's a lot that happened over a, you know, 6-7 day period there.
And you're right. I mean, he sounded ticked off in that post-trade deadline media. So I think that absolutely could be one of the scenarios that went down there. And then, Sal, the schedule for today with the Bills getting back to work.
Sean McDermott's going to speak to the media a little over an hour from now. We'll get an injury update today. They'll be on the practice field. And then, of course, we'll have a official injury report a little bit later. And on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday. And we'll keep you updated on their situation as well.
Sounds good, sir. We kept you along. Thanks so much. And we'll talk again soon.
You got it.
Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. 803-0550, the number two call. Mike Phillip, hang on the line. We'll get to you when we come back. We'll keep talking the Bills. We also had a big win yesterday in collegiate sports. We'll get to that and plenty more as we roll along here on a bit of a dreary Wednesday. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer.
Speaking of being dreary a little bit, let TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence help that by intercepting your heating bills. Enter now at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 toward your home.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. The contest ends January 4th, 2026. We're already in November, guys. Make sure you're getting in there if you want to try to get this done. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, Electrical Excellence, powering tomorrow, comforting today. Paul Hamilton also at 11 o'clock here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR.
I'm going with Joshua Allen, and it's not even close. I think last year's success recipe is not this year's success recipe. Last year, we were all questioning Brandon Bean's decision to not give Josh a number one receiver. Buffalo Bills probably has the best trio of talent at the tight end position in the whole league. Those guys can play, but that's not a recipe for longevity when you have a third and six. You cannot be in 12 or 13 personnel. Well, you have, you know, gotta have the situations where somebody on the outside has to consistently beat man to man.
Former NFL MVP, Cam Newton, speaking on the Bills offense. And that's something, Derek, we've talked about a lot, that the recipe from last year is not working. And one of the things we didn't necessarily jump into, I think I've mentioned it, but didn't necessarily jump into, that Sal brought up, starting field position as well. Bills are second to last in the league, where last year they were one of the better ones, whether that be to takeaways, to you know, punt, kick return, what have you. They were one of the better ones in the league. This year, that has not been the case, and it has forced them even more so. Got to be perfect. And that's hard to do in the NFL for 17 games. That is very, very hard to do.
It's hard to be perfect like that. And it is getting to a point where it's worrisome. And it's a week-to-week league. We do have to remember that at the end of the day. They are 6-3. It's a week-to-week league. We were sitting here a week ago, flying on the seat of our pants, right?
Mm-hmm.
6-2, just beat Kansas City. You were pretty much in control of that game. Everything's cool, right? And then 1 week later, we're all like, this stinks and nobody's having fun. And I think we just need to remember that for a second. And yet at the same time, I hate that this is where we're going, because what it does is it reminds you of even those couple of wins early in the year where they don't look that impressive while doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Mentioned how they had control in the Kansas City game the entire time. It's not that I had legitimate fears that they would lose to Miami the first time around or the New Orleans game. I didn't have like that legitimate kind of fear, but man, you didn't look good. And then they do lose to Miami, and it's like, all right. All those things are being brought up again. The New England and Atlanta losses are coming back here. Mm-hmm. Bad time being had all around. The weaknesses are the weaknesses. The national media now pointing out Brandon Bean's comments that were made in April. Yep. Welcome to the party, pal, first of all. And second of all, it's frustrating. All it takes is one good game against Tampa Bay to get us back into good spirits.
Well, I mean, look what the Kansas City win was, right? I mean, the Kansas City win was basically that, too, of like, okay, you've won two in a row, looking great.
But again, it turns into a very disturbing trend on the other end. Remember how I've always, early in the year, I had said something about this of like, you need to win X game because I don't want to think about the other side. It was Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't want to look at the other side if we don't.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like in the Avengers. We have to win.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to go about if we don't. Steve Rogers. It's not the exact quote, but I'm paraphrasing on that. So I'm Steve Rogers in this. They have to win against Tampa Bay, mostly because I don't want to think about the other side of this.
Yeah.
And yet, at the same time, the way that they've been playing, I have to. I don't want to, but I have to. Because they have been performing now in a way that is, I don't know about worrisome, but it's definitely worth paying attention to.
It's not a great trend.
No.
Also, average starting field position, they were not one of the best. They were the best, 33.4, their average starting field position. I'm checking this year real quick. We know their bottom two, but I just want to show how different it has been.
Yes.
And 28.5. Philadelphia is 28.2.
And starting field position could also do with, like, the defense gives up a little bit more.
No, it's 100%.
It's a deeper punt versus, you know, you get a quick three and out and it forces a punt and you've got favorable position.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just kickoffs. It's not just punt returns as well.
It's the takeaways, all that
it's jazz. The takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
That's their biggest problem here, Zach. It's not necessarily the return game. It is the fact that the highly volatile stat finally has come back with the other side of the coin. They have reliably, through the entirety of Sean McDermott's tenure as the head coach, been a top 10 team in takeaways. This year, that's not happening as much. Those plays aren't being made on the other side of the ball. And while injury does have a lot to do with some of these issues, poor tackling does too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How do you flip the field? Long run because there's a couple tackles missed, a couple blown assignments on run coverage, and the next thing you know, it's at the 33-yard line.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Pittsburgh, the best so far this year, own 33.9, and they still suck on offense. What a travesty of an organization right now. 803-0550, the number two call. Let's ring up the phone lines now. We'll start with Mike today. Mike, how we doing, man?
Good, thank you. You were just talking about injuries, and mm-hmm. I don't know if you can pull up the stats for this year as far as teams that have lost, like, the most starters, the most man time lost, I guess, due to injuries. But I'd imagine that that the Bills, as far as starters, have probably lost probably more games to injury than probably every other team. And then second of all, I'm starting to wonder that if maybe this offensive coordinator's lack of imagination or the ability, maybe he just doesn't have the ability to scheme concepts. I can see if a lot of these receivers were in their first and second years, but these receivers have experience either with other teams or even with the Bills when it comes to Shakir
mm-hmm.
as far as being able to catch some balls. And this offensive coordinator, you know, as far as I watch the Bills, and they run basically the same, you know, three types of passing plays. They either run that wide receiver screen, a 6 or 7 yard pass to Kincaid in the middle of the field there, or they run that back shoulder or jump pass on the sideline there to Coleman. That seems to be the main passes that the Bills have used pretty much this whole year. And I'm wondering, every time I watch the Bills, maybe I'm missing it, but they don't seem to run any bunch formations. And to me, that's a way of getting people, you know, finding ways to get people open, because I've seen it with other teams mm-hmm. where you create a bunch situation there, and it seems to scheme one or two people open. And I just wonder if you guys have noticed that they don't run any bunch formations.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. This is where I know a caller brought it up this morning with Jeremy and Joe, but I'm going to say the same thing. Greg Cosell on One Bills Live, his weekly appearance, he mentions a lot about the Bills' passing concepts and how they, this is not his exact word, but, you know, unimaginative. They're not doing everything they can. And that's where I do almost have the struggle going back and forth with, is it a talent issue? Is it the coaching? It's probably both.
It's
probably
be
an
both.
Ugly marriage. And yeah, no, I think to the caller's point, to Mike's point, they kind of do run sort of the same stuff over and over and over again. You know, Howard Simon yesterday bringing up that Khalil Shakir, can we throw the ball past the line of scrimmage every now and then for him? It seems like everything's at the line or is behind the line, those bubble screens. You know, Dalton Kincaid, where I get excited when they use him is that he's actually in the middle of the field going down the field. That's something we've talked about a lot, is maybe the biggest positive they've had in the passing game is Dalton Kincaid went from a guy that couldn't even, you know, his average yards per reception, I think, was under 10 yards. And it's jumped up this year to, I think, around 14, 15. He's been their big play guy. That's, I think, where they're going to miss it. I wonder what they look like, though, when they've got Gabe Davis in the lineup and Josh Palmer and Mecole Hardman and more of these, quote-unquote, seasoned receivers, vet receivers. Maybe it looks different. Maybe it looks better. I'm not holding my breath. The longer this goes on, the more I feel like this is probably more in line with Joe Brady having an issue with the passing game, and maybe more towards people when we were talking about the trade deadline of why even bring in a receiver, the guy's not going to use him. I think that maybe is correct at this point. If they brought in someone like a Rashid Shaheed, how much would he really change you? Because you can point to guys like Curtis Samuel and Elijah Moore having great years on bad teams, and yet they come to Buffalo now, and Elijah Moore looks like a guy that shouldn't even be in the league, and that was not true last year in Cleveland. 803-0550, the number to call. Sabres are in action tonight at Utah. Paul Hamilton's going to join the show in about 15 or so minutes. Before we take our next timeout, though, Tailgate Trivia is back. It is presented by Total Sports Enterprise Buffalo. Listen during every Bills game for your chance to call in, answer the trivia question, and win autographed Bills merch. That is courtesy of TSE Buffalo. If you're on hold, stay there. When we come back, we'll get to your calls, and we'll get to Paul Hamilton as well at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Hour number one, wrapping up here on a bit of a gloomy Wednesday. However, it was a very good night last night locally in collegiate basketball as UB men go to DePaul in Chicago. 19.5-point dogs, Derek. They win by 13.
They won a money game.
They won a money game. John Rothstein, CBS Sports, the epitome of brutality. They dominated DePaul early in that game. I was able to keep up with it a little bit here, but there was some top 25 action that was locked in. Louisville, Kentucky was phenomenal. But I was keeping up with this. They dominated the first half. DePaul got white hot from three in the second half.
But they survived.
UB survives. Ryan Sable and Daniel Freetag were phenomenal last night, and really some clutch performances from them. They were picked 11th in the MAC this year. This is still a program that is reeling from the 4-win season from 2 years ago, the 9-win season last year, and the 6 total conference
still
wins.
Still recovering from the departure of Nate Oates.
And that was, I think, the best win they've had under Halkovich. You're 19.5-point dogs at tip-off, and to win by 13, a true road game. They're 3-0. I saw this from Howard Simon this morning. Only the second time they've started 3-0 in the last 30 years.
Whew.
And even their first win of the year, Southern Miss, they win that game at home. Southern Miss, I think 2 or 3 days after that, goes into South Carolina and drags that game to overtime. And so they've picked up some pretty darn good wins here. They'll probably, I'm going to put quotation, probably, I've been wrong before, go back to the videos with the Miami Dolphin Bills pregame.
Don't go back to those
Don't
videos,
go back
actually.
To those. I've been very wrong. But they've got RIT on Saturday at home. It's 11 o'clock. I'll be in attendance. I haven't been to Alumni Arena in a long time. It's something that, you know, I was like, you know what? Let's do it. I'm feeling good about Western New York basketball. I did not think this could. I was hoping they would just be in the MAC tournament. That's been a big problem, too. They haven't even qualified
for the MAC
tournament. But now it's early signs. It's still way too early, 3 games in. But a quality win for them. I know it's DePaul. They're the basement of the Big East. However, the mighty have fallen for UB. The days of NATO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Votes are a long time ago. This is a quality win for a team hoping to rise back up to the top of the mid-major groups, and we'll see if they can do that. But great job by George Halkovich and his crew. Wonderful game for them. 803-0550, the number to call. We have Sabres game tonight. They are out west at Utah, 9 p.m. start time, 8 p.m. pregame. We'll get a little bit of a heads up, though, because there's a lot going on with the Sabres. A lot of it not great. Paul Hamilton's going to join the show next. You're listening to WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
Mamma mia, here I go again. My, my,
know that music. Sabres game day. They begin a bit of a road trip here. Back to back tonight in Utah, tomorrow in Colorado, I believe Saturday in Detroit. And boy, they have been just injured to hell. It's not even just injuries. It is also extenuating circumstances off the ice as well. We bring in now Paul Hamilton here on the Western Hotline. And Paul, yeah, it feels like every other day another big blow is coming to the Sabres.
Yeah, it does. You just get a couple of guys back, then a couple more go down. You know, in Kulik and Zucker's case, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, quote, injuries. They didn't pull a groin or break a leg or, I mean, for Kulik, he was getting the fluid around his ears checked out. And while they were doing that, separate from it all, they find a blood clot, which really, from a human interest standpoint, is good they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
goodness, that can kill you.
Yeah,
if that goes untreated, that can kill you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not exaggerating here. So, I mean, it's good they found that. But and then Zucker is so bad. He has, you know, he came on WGR yesterday morning with the boys and said, Lindy Ruff said Zucker hasn't had solid food in 9 days. So not only is he that ill when he is able to get back on the ice, he's got to get his strength back.
Yeah.
How long does that take? I can't tell you.
I mean, it's incredible, and I don't use that word positively, of course. It's just, it feels like blow after blow after blow. And, yeah, you're looking at human interest stuff here. Zucker not eating solid food for 9 days, the Kulik blood clot, and then Dahlin having to go back to Sweden. He dealt with something horrific in the offseason, and then you also just have – other injuries. Benson's picked up an injury here or there. It's incredible. And now they're on this road trip.
Benson
Utah
starts the season taking a punch to the face.
Right. He starts the season, gets an infection or so, whatever happened there.
Well, don't forget the one injury they couldn't afford to have, and it was the first one. Josh Norris. They have nobody to fill in for Josh Norris. This team has no depth. I mean, the Florida Panthers are hanging in there okay, and they don't have their top two players who are superstars in Barkov and Tkachuk. Ottawa, look where they are. Brady Tkachuk isn't playing for them. Batherson didn't play for a long time. You know, the injuries haven't been as numerous, but they certainly have lost their best players, and, you know, they're hanging in there too. So, not only do you have injuries, but Bo Byram has just been nowhere this year. This is a guy who's a fourth overall pick. He's playing like a street free agent right now. And it just, you can't have that. You can't have, playing like that. I mean, Peyton Krebs is a number one pick. Again, he's playing like somebody claim off waivers. Jack Quinn, high number one pick. He gave you what, four games?
Yeah, he's had some flash, where
he lived up for it, lived up to it. Now Owen Power, I think, has had a pretty good season. He had one or two fairly bad games. I thought actually he stepped up pretty well in Darlene's absence so far. So I think that's encouraging to see some of the improvement that I've seen in him so far this year. Nothing. Tage Thompson, nothing. I mean, your best, not only do you have the injuries, but your best two scorers were slumping. And now they both, it's interesting how Ryan McLeod, when he was with Doan and Tuck, I believe Money Puck had them the seventh best line in the NHL. And I think we could have guessed that without even seeing the analytic numbers. But you could just see how good they were together. So in the third period the other night in Carolina, when they have an awful second period, they put McLeod with Thompson and Tuck. I think they spent the whole third period in the offensive zone and scored two goals. And it just seems like McLeod really has a knack for him being able to help with lines and help motor lines. He has that speed, which helps. And so he has helped two different lines now, but – and I don't disagree with Lindy having him up there, but with him up there, you're a one-line team. People like to number lines. All right, I'll number lines for you. You got a first line and three fourth lines, basically, is what you've got right now. I'm not criticizing. I think you almost have to. I mean, you had to get Tuck and Thompson going. and, you know, splitting them up and having other people around, or maybe having Padone back with Tuck and McLeod, and hopefully Thompson can get other. Thompson wasn't driving lines. He was just blah. So you got to get him going. And maybe after that third period, what we saw, McLeod, you know, will help those two get going, and he can get on the board.
One of the combinations I saw from yesterday's practice, Paul, that I am back to a little bit more intrigued is they reunite Östlund with Rozane and Quinn. It was one of the more entertaining lines the last time they played Utah, oddly enough. And now they have a chance here again to kind of reform a kid line, so to say, Quinn being part of it. But, you know, it's Östlund and Rozane who've played a lot of time together on task in Rochester. They play well together in Rochester, and now here they are again having an opportunity. And hopefully it becomes a first line, only two fourth lines, and a kid line.
Well, one of the reasons, I don't know if people realize this, no team in the NHL this early in the season has done more to ruin the Buffalo Sabres than the Utah Mammoth. The Utah Mammoth are the reason the Sabres have the worst record in the Eastern Conference. Not only did they come into Buffalo and play much better than, and then goalie them totally, since that game where their goaltender stood on his head for the first period and then basically stood in the crease after that, they've given up 15 goals in three games. Mm-hmm. So that's they have lost three straight games and five out of six. Well, who have the Mammoth lost to? Tampa Bay, Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto. And then they come in and beat the Sabres.
That's all the Atlantic.
I mean, yeah, just doing absolutely zero favors. Thanks, guys. We gave you Paterno.
Nobody
Thank you.
Has done any. Nobody has been worse to the Buffalo Sabres in the NHL than the Utah Mammoth early in the year. You know, with what they've done. I mean, the teams around Buffalo, they're handing 2 points to. They hold Buffalo to no points in the game they play them. And they showed that you can score on them, because in the last three games against Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto, Utah has given up 15 goals. So I don't know if they're going to be a little mad as they come home now from that debacle. At least you know they can be had. You know, at least you know they're not the best team in the National Hockey League. At least you know in Carolina your top players were your top players again. So just pick up where you left off in the third period, and I think you'll be fine. And I think you can come in and win this hockey game, because your best players are going to be your best players. And if you get some production out of some of your best players, you can come in this game, because you've got to win this game. You've got to. Look at where they are right now. I really, 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 mm-hmm. really hate saying this. I really mm-hmm. do. But this is the early crossroads that they have failed for the last 14 years. Early in the season, I mean, it was just around Thanksgiving time when the 13-game winless losing streak, whatever you want to call it, hit last year and eliminated them. Here they are. You know, they've now lost three in a row. They have the worst record in the Eastern Conference. And they're 4 points out of the playoffs. You go into Utah, Denver, and Detroit and get nothing, that's it. Yeah. By the weekend, you're done.
That's the scary part of this, too, Paul.
Because it's the same thing mm-hmm. that I have, you guys, I know you have heard me say this for how many years. You were probably in junior high school the first time I said it. It was like, okay. All right, let's say you're down 6-7 points by the end of the weekend if the disaster hits. If you're in ninth place, I'm probably not even mentioning it. It's like, all right, you're down 5-6 points. You can make that up. The team in front of you for the playoffs, there's only one team in front of you. You can get that. That's not a big deal. You're not eliminated. You're fine. You just got to start winning some hockey games. But right now, you have to leapfrog every single team in the conference.
Again.
Up till eighth place. You have to leapfrog everybody to get there. If you're right now, you're 4 points back. If you come out of here and you're still only 4 points back by the end of the weekend, okay, you're fine. You haven't eliminated yourself. But if you're six or seven, and you have to leapfrog everybody
again.
Again, ain't happening. It's just not. It's not going to happen. They almost did it the 1 year when Florida got in by one, you know, beat the Sabres by 1 point. They leapfrogged five of the six teams they needed to get by. So they almost did it once. But it's just an awful tough task to have every team in the East have to falter. Are they all going to falter for you so you can get by them? Even if you go on a modest winning streak of some types, yeah, you'll come up. They did last year.
Mm-hmm.
They were basically in dead last, and then that last month of the season, they played very well. They passed some teams, about half of them, but that's not good enough. That didn't get you anywhere. What did that get you? Where you go, well, maybe we can pick up where we left off this year. That's where it gets you. And they're finding out they can't because it's a different team. It's different guys.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to pick up where you left off. It's a different team. So this game, to me, I know it's November, and I know there are 82 games, but this game, Colorado, I don't know. What are you thinking? 3 points maybe minimum in these three games, minimum, to stay alive.
That's kind of what it feels like. And, Paul, this is this frustrating, scary, however you want to put it, situation is we've already laid out how they look in terms of the injuries. They're not getting any good deals here. It is all a raw deal. But
nobody's coming back in these three games.
No, exactly. And to a certain extent, outside of the human interest, I think a lot of Sabres fans are kind of like, okay, we do this every year, though. You look like this. I mean, we're three losses in regulation away from on Monday. Everyone's talking about Gavin McKenna from Penn State, and you know, restarting the tank all over again.
Well, they're ahead of enough Western Conference teams. Right. I don't think that's going to wind up being in the conversation.
No, but people will want it to be. That's the problem. Everybody will be like, all right, trade off Thompson, trade off Tuch, let's move on. And that's a frightening place to be. And it's not that long ago, Paul, that we were talking about, you know, does this team look different? And they did. They were picking up loser points. They're crashing the net. They're getting timely saves and good goaltending. They brought themselves back after starting the year 0-3. And it just has not gone that well. And you mentioned they got Utah. And then they've got a Colorado team that is white hot and is kicking people in the teeth. And then Detroit, who seemingly the Yzer plan is starting to finally work and they're starting to look pretty good. It's just, it is not a comfortable Western road trip. It's not like they're going up against San Jose's and you know, starting it in Nashville or anything like that. It's not that at all.
Yeah, this is a four-game road trip. You're already 0-1. And in your last three games overall, you've picked up 1 point. You're 0-2-1. You've lost all three. So, yeah, I mean, that's why you're the worst team in the conference, because you've picked up 1 point and three. I mean, it was crazy when they were doing really well and only had one regulation loss in, what was it, 9 or 10 games. And they're just basically sitting there in the middle with 1 point out of last place and 1 point out of the playoffs. But everybody was with them. The problem is everybody is leaving them right now. I mean, the teams that are with them are starting to dwindle. And now they're getting 4 points ahead or 3 points ahead. And because you can't afford to put a string of losses together with everything this tight.
You can't do that. Yeah, Paul. And it is getting to a point where it is frustrating. You mentioned a player that needs to step up in this amongst a couple of the players there. I do think that it's smart that Lindy Ruff broke up the Byram and Kesselring pairing there. Byram with Timmins yesterday, Bryson with Kesselring. Byram's got to be playing better, and it has been glaringly obvious. I think no worse, I think, than in that Carolina game, that Byram was just almost a blight on the team that night in Carolina.
This is a fourth overall pick we're talking about, who I have seen live up to it at times. But, again, it's just not been good at all that you're looking at. It's too many, you know, too many guys who aren't living up to it. And you know, I was told because people were getting on Rasmus Dahlin, and I said, come on, you got to give this guy some grace. I mean, none of you understand what he's feeling. I unfortunately wish I didn't, but I do. I know right. How scared he is. I've been there. I mean, it's just you're helpless. There's nothing you can do. At least in my case, my wife was here. She wasn't in Sweden. But you know, it's that dominates your thoughts. We forget that athletes are husbands, fathers, you know, and that type of thing. And they go home and they have to figure out their bills and they have to figure out getting kids to school and figure, you know, just like everybody else does.
They are still
they have a lot more. They have a lot more money to operate with than everybody else does, you know, to figure things out. But things like this are happening to Rasmus Dahlin's fiance has nothing to do with money. You know, this is real life. So, you know, of course it's going to affect his play. Of course it's going to affect him as a human being. And you got to give the kid some grace. I mean, it's just, you know, and as I, you know, moving on to some of the other guys, people don't want to give Owen Power any credit because he doesn't hit people. And I couldn't care less if he throws another body check the rest of his career. If he kills plays and does better in front of the net and takes plays away there and joins the rush, I mean, it's killing plays that you need out of him. You don't need him to be standing guys up and killing them like Scott Stevens used to. I mean, you don't need him cross-checking people around the neck 25 times like Craig Reve used to. I mean, but you need him to kill plays. And I think for a lot of this season, he has. But in this town, if you don't have 15 hits in a game, they don't want to know anything about you. And I think there has been improvement in his game. I think he's improved his strength. I've noticed he can lean on people a little bit now. And that's all you have to do. You don't have to run him through the back wall. I mean, the overtime goal...
Yep.
That he gave up the one. That's the example of what he needs to do and didn't. He had the guy covered, took him to the wall, but let him come off the wall and score. No, just you've made the play. Don't let him come off the wall and beat you to the net. That was the problem that I didn't like about it. He was fine until then, and that's where he has to learn. And at his age, take a look at what Victor Hedman was like at his age. Take a look at what Erik Karlsson was at his age. Take a look at what Rasmus Dahlin was at his age. They weren't Hedman or Karlsson or Dahlin. They were struggling. So it doesn't always happen like Quinn Hughes. You know, Quinn Hughes stepped into the league and he was fantastic.
Yep.
You know, it didn't happen that way for Rasmus Dahlin. You know, it took him a while too. So it doesn't always happen that way. You know, so I'm not saying that Owen Power is going to be a great defenseman. I don't know. But I still think he has the opportunity. What I am saying is he still has the opportunity. I believe he's 22 years old at age 22. I certainly would not. I wouldn't give up on Byram yet either. You know, I think he has the capability, because I've seen him do it, of playing like a guy who was drafted fourth overall. But too many inconsistencies from guys that should be playing better.
Paul, finally tonight, though, the return for Josh Doan and Michael Kesselring. Obviously, we had Paterka's return to Buffalo. Now we get the other side of the trade for Doan and for Kesselring. Their first game in Utah since being dealt over the offseason as well here. Doan has been a pleasant surprise. Kesselring, I thought he needed a couple games because he had no preseason to get really warmed up here. And I do think that him being off of the pairing with Byram, it wasn't working between the two of them. So hopefully having Bryson there for Kesselring will be better for him there as well. But yeah, Doan and Kesselring tonight, their return to Utah.
I know. Bryson is who he is. He's a number seven defenseman. That's who he is. But I just shake my head. The guy is always ready. He can go a month without playing. He played very well in Carolina, and he hadn't played in a while. And he jumps right in, and he's ready to go. He keeps himself ready. Most players can't do that. They need some time to ramp up if they haven't played in a month or whatever it was. You know, and so I thought he had a really nice game, you know, against Carolina, just jumping in after he hadn't played in a while. And that's what he's here for. He's not here to be one of the top six. There was so much hand-wringing when he got signed. I go, but you people just stop. He's a 7-8 defenseman. That's all they did. That's all they signed. Relax. They didn't sign him to play next to Dahlin. I mean, for what he is, that's fine. He doesn't complain. He knows what his role is. you know, last year he wound up in waivers in Rochester for a while. Again, went down, played well, didn't complain. And, you know, so it's just one of those guys that I just – too many people worry about Jacob Bryson and him being on the team and whatever. Just move on. There are a lot bigger fish to fry in this hockey team than Jacob Bryson being the seventh or eighth defenseman on this team.
All right, Paul. Game time tonight. It is the first Sabres After Dark, 9 p.m. start time, at least here locally, 8 p.m. pregame. We'll hear you on the pregame. But thanks for jumping on with us. We'll talk again soon, man. Enjoy the game tonight.
Okay, take care.
Thanks, Paul.
Hamilton there on the West Her Hotline. Yeah, they're gonna need to do something on this road trip.
They're going to need to do something.
I almost don't count the Carolina loss, though, because they haven't won there since 16. So I'm like, yeah, our loss, got it.
They haven't won since – well, it would have been an awfully nice time to change
that. It would have been a great time. I'm just not holding my breath for that.
But. No, yeah. But also, you haven't won in Utah.
No, that's right. That's right.
Ever.
That's right.
So
still fresh, but yes.
Yes, but fix that.
Yep. So Utah tonight at 9, tomorrow Colorado, same time, and then Saturday at Detroit.
Especially
that won't be,
win
be 7.
That game because Colorado's literally the next night.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you got to win tonight.
Colorado, by the way, 11-1-5 to start the year. They've had one regulation loss. Yeah.
Yeah, win Incredible. Tonight, please. Please win tonight. Otherwise, this can get off the rails fast for them. Like Paul just mentioned, all of a sudden the teams that you were hanging around with at the bottom
yep.
are leaving you at the tarmac.
Start really passing you. 803-0550, the number to call. We also have some injury news for Bills Bucks. Bucks running back Bucky Irving back at practice today. He has not played since late September, but he is at practice today. We'll see if that means he's playing this week, how much he practices today. But that is the report from Ian Rapoport and Rick Stroud down in Tampa Bay. Again, the number to call, 803-0550. We'll be right back. This is WGR.
I'm going to pass on talking about injuries. Since Rich, he's not here, has all the answers. So you guys can get all the injuries from Rich. Well, I'm telling you to ask Rich. Well, you better call him.
No disrespect to you or Rich, but like we want to hear from you. You know, like
you guys have been here. You guys have been hearing from me. But now since we're just reporting stuff, you know, that I haven't said, then maybe you should ask him.
That is New York Jets head coach Aaron Glenn. And boy, his first year has not been a good ride at all.
The Jets? No way.
I know. Oh, man.
No matter how good the idea,
yeah.
The New York Jets find a way to go, but what if it was with the Jets?
Yeah, let's see how
I love
much
this idea.
Screw this up.
But what can we do to make it worse?
I love the Aaron Glenn hire for them. I thought he was somebody that could bring in a better culture for them, quote-unquote adults in the room sort of deal. No, it's been the exact opposite. It has been a tire fire there kind of from day one, because now you look back to even the handling of Aaron Rodgers. Seems now more petty than anything. And this clip kind of points to that might be more his nature. I don't know.
It might have been Aaron Glenn actually just deciding.
That's him. That's who he is as a guy.
Yeah.
And now here, he's getting upset because a reporter's tweeting on injuries. And now he's going to make everybody else uncomfortable. It's so weird and just kind of off-putting.
Not everything has to be a fight, especially when you're 2-7.
Well, and that's my thing, too. Take a look in the mirror. There's a reason why people are going to be more critical. You're 2-7. You started the year 0-7. Your quarterback can't throw more than 70 yards. He got 41 of, like, what, Justin Fields threw 55 yards. He got 41 of them off a Breece Hall pass. There's a reason why, man.
And, again, not everything has to be a fight. That's the thing. Glenn has become so combative over, like, quite literally anything at this point. Because this is not the first time he's done this year.
No.
Like, all you have to do is just settle in, man. Know that the questions are going to be a little rough. You signed up for this. You don't need to fight back every time. You're in year one. Pace yourself, man.
Right. It makes some friends in the media. I mean, it gets some allies here.
Not even that.
Instead, he's picking a fight with everyone. Well, but
it's pace yourself, too, though.
But if next year they're not good,
you
don't got anyone in the media sitting there go, guys, give him time. Like I know the vision. I've talked to him. He's going to have a bunch of people going, yeah, I can't wait to get him out. Good. Yeah. Let's go. Let's pick up the process here.
I'm just more or less at the dog. It's year one.
And you're right. Pace yourself.
Pace yourself.
Oh, just Yeah, it's the Jets. I mean, what's even surprising at this point? They're going to have two firsts next year and three in 27, and they'll probably botch it somehow, some way. 803-0550, the number to call. We were talking Bills in the first hour. We took a little bit of a detour there with Paul Hamilton. Talk the Sabres tonight as they are in action in Utah. But we will get back to the phones, and we'll start this segment off with Sean on the line. Sean, what's going on, my man?
How's it going, Zach? Hope you guys are having a good day.
You as well.
Thank you. All right, so let me premise this conversation. I'll try not to be long-winded. Let's both agree. We are in agreement that Joe Brady was the passing game. Let me say this again. The passing game coordinator at LSU when they set all the records, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That is correct.
So let's go into this real quick. Dan, I am not like a fandom. I'm more of an analytics guy and a film guy, and I actually watch this stuff, this all 22 stuff. So to get to the point, I watched NFL Live the other day when Orlovsky was breaking down, and I'm going to piggyback off the last caller that was actually talking about before you guys went to Paul Hamilton. But basically, the route concepts are playing. This is the passing game coordinator, not the running game coordinator. This is a passing game coordinator for Joe Burrow. Pass game concepts are vanilla. They're non-creative anymore. So my point was, I'm glad, even though there were reports that they were in on Olave or Waddle or whoever, this wouldn't have made any difference if we would have spent all these first-round picks or whatever we were going to give for these people, because they wouldn't have been able to come in here in a half a year, get up to speed on Joe Brady's system. Like, they need to – I feel like they need to put more on the players – as far as play calling is concerned. So in other words, Joe Brady, if his stuff is becoming vanilla, man, like after 6 weeks or something like that, start switching up your pass route concepts. Stop with the deep overs or the layer concepts and stuff like that. And that's what Orlovsky broke down on NFL Live that I was like really intrigued with. And he said even when they go to checks at the line and stuff like that, it's like two different plays. That's it. There's no creativity. So in my opinion, I'm glad they didn't spend anything on a receiver, because all that did would have hemmed us up for the next couple years without having draft picks. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, either he gets better as a creative play caller and not be so vanilla where defenses finally know and they're catching up to him, or B, you fire the guy and you get a passing game coordinator in here and then you go after the assets. That's all I wanted to say, guys. Hope you have a great day, and interested to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Thanks, Sean.
Appreciate that.
You know what's funny about Brady, too, is you bring up passing coordinator. I mean, ignited a fire in college football. It is, the 2019 LSU offense is still the most fun and aggressive and stylish offense I've ever seen. It was just deep bomb after deep bomb after deep. Everybody's open. There's first-round talent and all-pro talent everywhere. It's incredible. And Brady, in many aspects, is considered the architect of that. He's not the OC, and he's not even really the full-time play caller, but he is considered by many the main architect. And then he goes to Carolina. And what does he get fired in Carolina for? Passing the ball too much. Matt Rhule wanted him to run the ball more. And they weren't running it enough. It was putting too much strain on their defense. They weren't a good team, but they were passing the ball a ton. Curtis Samuel has a career year with Joe Brady.
As a matter of fact,
it is, weirdly enough, just a Buffalo thing where all of a sudden the boundary receivers is a real problem. He can't get any use out of them. It's becoming very vanilla. I mentioned this too. Like, Dan Orlovsky is not the only one that's brought this up. Greg Cosell, when he goes on One Bills Live, has acknowledged the passing concepts are not very good. It is very strange, because I will never forget when Brady was hired following his firing. I was taking over for Joe DiBiase, who at the time was producing, and we were switching out. And we both looked at each other and went, that's the heir. He will be the Bills offensive coordinator at some point, and thank goodness. Like, we were excited for that guy.
Yep.
And now that he's taken over, it has been very weird that it is not the passing game that has all of a sudden reignited itself. Because the LSU Joe Brady and even the Carolina Joe Brady, you would have thought, give me all the receivers, baby.
Yeah.
That's what I work
with.
Load me up. And instead, it has been much more of ground and pound, control the line of scrimmage, and dominate with the run game and limit possessions. And I think that has been him, because you go back to Sean McDermott's comments from the last few weeks. He's not happy with the passing game. He has mentioned not wanting to lose the fastball in years past with wide receivers. It is such a curiosity with Brady. And it is also something that does make me more concerned going long term of, dude, what happened? This was not the Joe Brady that was built up to eventually become an offense coordinator with Carolina and is now still being looked at as potentially the next head coach for LSU. That's why they want him. It's 2019. But 2019 feels so – I mean, it is long ago, but it feels forever ago.
It feels forever ago. And I think that some of this also has to do with – I don't want to go ahead and bash what he did at LSU, but he does have incredible talent on that roster.
It does help. That is fair. Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Joe Burrow will help things. That's absolutely true.
And I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not a good pro running back, but he was fantastic at LSU.
Mm-hmm. And that is Moss at tight end.
Yes.
Randy Moss's son.
Yeah. So all I need to think of in this point is there is something to the coaching. Brady has shown to be almost unimaginative at times or predictable in others. Can they win, though? Yes. Things do have to go right. They have a dominant run game. That gets you somewhere in January.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I'm not saying running the ball is bad. I'm saying that when your entire offense is predicated on if your running back is getting off and you have an MVP quarterback, that's a problem.
The only problem here is they've become the wrong kind of one-dimensional when you have Josh Allen this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's weird. It's survivable in games. You can still succeed, but I'm sure as hell going to look at it and go, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that James Cook has to be the one that succeeds in order for this offense to get going and not Josh Allen? I don't know. I don't like it. It's weird. It can work in January, but it's weird. And I think that alone is enough to get people concerned. It's weird.
Ultimately, it would be one thing if your quarterback was Daniel Jones.
Right.
All of a sudden, it's, hey, we need to kind of build a system around him to cover up his flaws and to make sure we're not putting ourselves in bad situations. Jonathan Taylor. They've also loaded up with weapons there, and we're also seeing,
they have tons of pretty good receivers there.
And there's moments where Daniel Jones looks awesome, and you're like, oh, man, like it was all the Giants' fault. Recently, though, not so much. You know, Jared Goff. With the Rams, I think is a really good example of this. Early in his career, who is the bell cow for that Rams offense? Who is the engine that gets that baby going? It's Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley in those early Sean McVay, Jared Goff years is the guy. He gets that baby moving. But they also had Robert Woods, who kind of entered his prime. They had Tavon Austin, I think, as well. They had good weapons all around, and it was able to keep going. That's my biggest issue. It's not the fact that they are running the ball and that James Cook is good. Far from it. Good. They need elite players on the offense.
It's that when he's not.
They don't have another option. When I look at the Lions, they want to run the ball. They can also throw the ball. The Rams are one of those teams as well. Philadelphia last year, they're weird. It's up in it every year. They are
Kevin
different.
Patullo is a bad offensive coordinator. He should not count for any analysis this year.
But a team that they're about to play when they're healthy, Tampa is more than happy to run the ball with Bucky Irving. They also have a plethora of wide receivers and a passing game that allows them to, when they go up against a team like the Bills are going to go up against Tampa, who have only given up 100 total rushing yards three times this year, they can sit there and go, cool, it's going to be the passing game today.
Carolina also gave up less than 50 yards in a 3-game stretch, mm-hmm. like per game.
Yeah.
And they decimated that. So it's all about, can the Bills just execute it in the run game? It is the problem that this offensive coordinator has suddenly turned the key component of the offense into the running back.
Yeah. Back to the phones. JD is up next. JD, how we doing?
Doing good, guys. Love the show.
Thank you.
I just want to say that, I think that Bean is paying a big price right now. First of all, I put the blame on players who get extensions and then don't live up to them, unlike James Cook, who does. I think that Bean has some big problems on his plate here, which is number one, Keon Coleman. And if you watch the All-22, you can see it's a struggle for him to get open. But he's paying the price for that. Another thing is I don't blame him. I don't blame Bean for going big on defense in the recent draft, but there really should have been at least one wide receiver. Bean is paying a big price for these half measures at wide receiver in terms of Samuel, guys like this. I also don't think that letting Mac Hollins walk away was a real good idea. I thought Hollins did real well and communicated with Allen real well.
Mm-hmm.
And Allen looks to me like a guy who really does not have the weapons that he needs. But I think that Bean is paying a very heavy price. So I'll just conclude with this. The one good thing the Bills have done this year is they paid James Cook, and then they went 50% of the game as the running game. That's the best thing you can do for Josh Allen. Let him limit him to maybe 25 or 30 throws a game. The running game clicks along. We lean on the running game. The running game has been a great, great asset this year. But the entire wide receiver room, Bean has a big problem. And, again, half measures are availing him little. And I'll hang up and take your comments.
JD, thanks for the call.
Thanks, JD.
And half measures, I think, is the right way to put it. Mm-hmm. And what's frustrating, maybe more than anything, is when you look at the raw numbers, the offense isn't bad. They're sixth right now in points for. They're averaging 27.6 points per game. That's the most irritating part of this whole thing, is that if the wide receiver room – here, Seattle. They draft Torrey Horton in the fifth round.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's a world beater.
He's been a fun piece for them.
But he's been a fun piece for them. If all of a sudden Torrey Horton is drafted in the fifth round by the Bills or the fourth round, and he's part of an offense that has Kincaid and Coleman maybe is in a more comfortable role, and Shakir and Palmer, that spreads them out. You saw it last year when they brought in Amari Cooper. It allowed everyone to just move down a slot in the offense and work in their more natural roles. It is the half measures. It's why you hear that he was in on a wide receiver or maybe multiple on trade deadline day. It is why last year they had to go trade for a wide receiver in Amari Cooper. It has to change this offseason. They're going to have other issues. Probably a linebacker. We'll see about edge. We'll see about offensive line. But the wide receiver position has been ignored, I think, because they believe Josh Allen will make it work with anybody. Because to a certain extent, he does.
And interesting that you bring up Seattle, though. Clint Kubiak is becoming one of these guys that people are suddenly focusing on. He was the offense coordinator with the Saints last year.
Yeah, he's a dude.
Gets brought over to the Seattle Seahawks. And he seems to be very good at what he does here. He worked with Kevin Stefanski back in Minnesota. He has hopped around a little bit here. He worked with the Broncos with Nathaniel Hackett.
There we go.
But
welcome to the show, Nathaniel Hackett.
But Hackett hands play calling duties to Kubiak to end his season before he ultimately gets fired.
Mm-hmm.
He jumps with the 49ers, learns under Kyle Shanahan. Then he goes and he's the guy in New Orleans. And now he's the guy in as the OC with Seattle. Kubiak is an interesting young coordinator that teams might flock to as well.
Oh, I think when we're starting to wrap up the year and the head coaching cycle begins,
might he is going to be that favor. Guy.
And here's the thing, too. It's year two now for Darnold, but it's still Sam Darnold. And if they're putting up big numbers, and let's say, for argument's sake, go to the NFC Championship game, his name is going to be really brought up a lot. We'll see if he does the Ben Johnson route and maybe wants to hold on a little bit here, or if he strikes the iron while it's hot. We'll see. 803-0550, the number two call. Join Sal Capaccio and Matt Beauvais for the live recording of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast at Batavia Downs Gaming and Hotel on Tuesday, November 18th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Don't miss this upcoming events at Batavia Downs, including Thurman Thomas's tailgate party on November 20th and the Batavia Downs bar crawl on November 28th. Visit BataviaDownsGaming.com for more. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, we're with you till 12 o'clock when Sabres Live takes over. You're listening to WGR. Ready to take your game day to the next level? Enter online now at WGR550.com for a chance to win a $300 tailgate tray certificate from Alibaba Kebab to feed 12 football fans. Each Friday, a winner is going to be announced during Football Friday with Shobin the Bulldog. Fire up your taste buds at any of their three locations.
Dan, you keep firing up that pop punk. I'm just going to be vibing all time.
He's having a good Wednesday.
All times, every time.
We've been getting connected to our fans all day and yesterday as well. I've had a blast with that. I mean, I wish the Bills were better, but it is a lot of fun to talk to everybody. And when we do that, when we get connected to our fans, it's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And for your viewing pleasure or listening pleasure tonight, we did mention Sabres are in action at 9.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, though, I think this got started 2 weeks ago? Maction, UB football. They are in Central Michigan
Wednesday.
Tonight.
They're doing it wrong.
I know. Well, we had games yesterday. Now UB just gets to play today. Okay. We had MAC games yesterday. Don't worry.
Okay.
7 p.m. tonight over on CBS Sports, UB at Central Michigan. It'll also be over on our sister station, the Bet 1520. That's going to be at 7. I think pregame starts at 6:30. And then UB men were in action last night. UB women are in action tonight. They are at Vermont. The team UB men are going to be playing, I think, in a week or so. That game is at 4. Also, over on the Bet 1520, so do enjoy
Zach
that.
Zach is getting all the bills paid right now.
Yeah.
Generational run in the last 60 seconds.
Woo! No, I'm excited, though. UB football, they're weirdly – so they've had a weird year, to be perfectly honest. They have both been very good and very bad. They're 5-4. They are second in the MAC, though, and they will have remaining games, I think, against Ohio and Miami of Ohio to wrap this one up. Yeah, so they've got Central Michigan tonight, and then it's home against Miami, Ohio, and Ohio. They are still very much in a position to play for a MAC championship. They are second right now behind Western Michigan, 4-1 in the conference. Get the job done tonight against a team that's 3-2 in the conference, 5-4 as well. And then you've got Miami of Ohio and Ohio, who are right below you in the standings, to potentially play for a MAC title in Detroit coming up at the end of the season. That's going to do it for me and Derek. For more on the Sabres, though, who play tonight at 9. Stay tuned. Coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. This is WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.